This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by the University of Rhode Island Online, who are offering a cannabis certificate program. The legalization of recreational cannabis that went into effect last year can open doors for your career. If you are already in the industry or wondering what is the best path to break into the cannabis field, the University of Rhode Island has that program I just mentioned to help you become highly competitive in numerous areas of the cannabis industry. Fully accredited by URI's College of Pharmacy, their certificate program is 100% online, and it can be completed in just 2 semesters. The next application deadline for the summer 2023 session is April 4th, coming right up. Mark your calendars, right? Courses start May 9th. Learn more at uri.edu/online/cannabis or give them a call, 401-874-5280.
Hi, I'm John Hoole. I'm a new Rhode Island author, and I've owned a public relations and marketing company for 20 years called JH Communications, recently rebranded to Main Street Media.
So you've got, you're involved in Rhode Island in a lot of interesting ways. I mean, like you said, your public relations side is, your name's not attached to it in terms of the public facing portion, but you're out there and you're, you know, you've been tied to a lot of interesting stuff in Rhode Island. So I guess how did you first get involved in all of this?
Well, it's interesting. I just got off of a TV interview and they said the same thing to me. I've seen you here before. And I said, well, usually I'm behind the scenes. So I'm usually never front facing. I'm always behind and I'm always, there to, and I've been to your radio station before to have guests on. And I'll be there for moral support. But usually, and I do have a better face for radio and for audio. So I thought I turned my volume off of my. Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
I didn't know actually.
On my good. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
At least didn't know. No, yes.
I'm in my office and I'm hearing the. I thought I had muted the telephone.
Adapting to this sort of, I don't know what you'd call it. It's remote, sort of a convenient way to put it, but there's a simplicity that comes with working like for this show right here, working via Zoom. It used to be before the pandemic, every episode was in person. And I definitely miss that, the whole face to face and the subject would arrive at my spot.
But we are face to face and, I was able to travel on Friday with the launch of the book. And previous to that, I would have never have gone out of town, but I was able to have business meetings while I traveled from Zoom. So it's definitely been part liberating. And I can remember the early days, we talk about public relations, the earlier days when I was doing PR, when I first got into PR, I had a pager. Yeah. In case there's like a doctor at a pager, in case there's a PR emergency, right?
Right.
And I would get paged. And then it became cell phones, right? And we still obviously do that, but now I look at how the communication has evolved over the years. And now I get more text messages than emails, and you gotta stay with it. It's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. It's something that, like you said, that convenience factor. I definitely prefer to be in my studio to do a podcast, but if I'm on the road for something, we can still do it. And that is liberating. There's no doubt about it. So the book, The Kingmakers of Providence, the name jumps out at you. And I mean, you start.
Wasn't my name.
Oh, really? So where did the name come from?
Yep. The publisher. In fact, and I haven't told anybody this in the press, the original book was called Endgame, and then that became a movie, so I couldn't use that. And this is the whole evolution of this. This took me 20 years. Then I called it Silver Lake, and the book was set in the fictional city of Silver Lake, which, of course, was Providence. And it was the publisher that said, we believe that more books will sell in the Rhode Island market, so it's better to call it, have it set in Providence. And there was a line in the book where the main character Henry refers to someone as the kingmaker. He could be the kingmaker, and or so and so else would be the kingmaker. And when they saw that, when they were doing the editing, they said, we think actually the book would be better to be called Kingmakers. And we went back and forth whether it should be just the kingmakers and then the tie in the Kingmakers Providence. And it there's a lot of these Shakespearean and religious overtones in it peppered throughout the book. It goes back to my, you know, college days, and I took classes like Shakespeare's Political Wisdom. I was a poli-sci major. And so there's a lot of Shakespearean stuff in it. So like the whole idea of Providence, obviously a city, but Providence being God, you know, so I like the kingmakers of Providence. Obviously it's set here, and I originally though had wanted it to be representative of any middle-sized city, that this is what a political campaign in any middle-sized American city is like. Mm. We're probably a little bit more colorful than most, I would say.
I would say so. And there's definitely some history here that kind of goes back about 20 years that mm-hmm. feeds that color. Talk about the, you know, without necessarily giving away the entirety of the book, you know, what is it about, and where did you come up with the concept?
So, truth be told, I was the political consultant on the 2002 mayoral race. And prior to that, I had worked on other state Senate, state rep races. That was at the time the biggest race that I had been involved in. And then after that, I was involved with Secretary of State races and Lieutenant Governor races. And then I got out of politics. A lot of you'll see the evolution of the local political consultant. You either go down to D.C. and travel around the country in that world doing races, or you might do a congressional race in South Dakota. The other way is if you want to stay local, you just can't support yourself being a local political consultant. You go into PR. And so I went into PR. So I was involved in that race, and I had always wanted to write, and I had written before, and I had toyed with other novels. And I was, you know, single. I wasn't married at the time. I was 30 years old. I got pretty burnt out after running the race, and my guy lost. It was David Liozzi. I represented him. He was a state senator from Providence. Had a real good shot. He ran against Joe Paolino and David Cicilline. It was a three-way race. And somewhere along the lines, I was thinking, wow, you know, what would happen if the guy running the race was somehow compromised? But he really loved his candidate. And he was jaded and disillusioned in politics because he'd been doing it for so long, kind of like I had gotten. But then this figure restored his belief in politics. But then what if the main character does something really stupid? And then he is given a choice to either save himself but throw the race. But then he has to deal with the fact that he loves his guy. He loves his candidate. And anyone who's been involved in the process, and I was interviewed by Mike Levesque, a local political guy who was mayor of West Warwick. And he's kind of said it right, too. Like, if you're involved in it, it's all engrossing and you're in it. And like, it's like sports. And my former boss would describe it that way. It's like, it's the closest thing to being in sports because it's clear win or lose. Right. But so when you lose, you know, what do you do? So I did what everyone would do. I fled and I went to Europe. And so that's what my character does. Yeah. My mayor, instead of facing indictment, like our former mayor did, he flees. He happens to be on a cultural exchange in Ireland Providence and Cork, Ireland are doing some sort of like joint sister city kind of thing. And he's with the Providence delegation, and the Irish delegation is over here in Providence. And my mayor, Jack Donovan, who just happens to be hooked on cocaine. I don't know where I would get that from, but he's hooked on cocaine and he's running a criminal enterprise. And the reason he's running the criminal enterprise is because he's an addict and he needs the fund. He needs money. And he's this gregarious, larger than life character, but he gets tipped off that when he is going to land in Boston, he's going to get indicted. Now if you're told that, what would you do? Would you fly over and fight it? But if you're already on the lam, would you maybe risk it? So he has a cousin over in Ireland who happens to work for the IRA, smuggles him out of Ireland, and he ends up in Prague. And that's where I went. So when I lost the Providence mayoral race, I left and I went to Paris, but ultimately to Prague. Now, why Prague? Because one of my buddies that I went to BC with was an expatriate over there, and he was working for an English language newspaper. He was an editor. He's now works for the AP in Bangkok, of all places now. And so he hooked me up with his friends, and I stayed over there for a few weeks. And I said, I'm going to go finish the Great American Novel. And that's what I tried to do.
Really interesting. And look, let's be honest about it. You know, the Cianci lore is, it's equal parts fascinating and character oriented and somewhat embarrassing. But when it's looked at through a more creative lens or through, you know, an interpretation, it's a lot easier to appreciate just the phenomenon that actually took place in Providence.
How about a Shakespearean tragic hero lens?
Totally.
When you think about it, you know, I mean, we were talking about this, you know, he was talked about as a possible vice presidential candidate. And I mean, he had such talent. And and by the way, he did really, I mean, we're talking about him today, right? So, but from a literary perspective, certainly, and not just him, but certainly the whole state provides plenty of inspiration.
Yeah, as a whole, for sure. I mean, I think Rhode Island politics is, it's, I've heard from people in other places, whether it's on a citywide level or on even a statewide level, that a lot of what we zero in on here as the driving themes of Rhode Island politics that either make you roll your eyes or laugh or whatever it is, they happen in other places. It's just that because we're this condensed city state, scenes, if you will, those stories get amplified and the impact is so much greater and it's so much more theatrical in a way.
And, you know, a lot of one book I loved that is similar to this is The Last Hurrah. And it was based on the whole political machine in Boston and how that whole, and that's how I talk about in the opening of my book, the old political machine. And when I first was involved in politics, I saw that and it changed. Like I was there when they still had ward captains and they ran things all locally and literally we would do these events at senior centers, and whoever had the best pasta could win that senior center. Or we had we did ice cream socials, and but that was like the old school way we did things. And then I saw, and I was there as part of it, where that started to transform, and it's all big money now, you know, because of the costs involved of running. And so now, you know, that's what I think has been the big shift.
Definitely. You can see it in this congressional race that we have emerging here in Rhode Island, where, look, you know, there are candidates that are lining up that on paper from a representation standpoint would be excellent. The question is, will they even be able to raise a quarter of the dollars that would be required to even be remotely competitive? In fact, you can make an argument the entire Republican Party in Rhode Island is subject to that, where there's almost no traction because the fundraising apparatus is just not there. And look, you know, it creates the dynamic that we have in the state, whether that's something that you're in favor of or it's something that you are opposed to. It's reality.
And I say that actually in my book, in the opening chapter, and this is our Henry Mercutio, the main character, is kind of going through that. He's running a gubernatorial race. And he says to himself, he's like talking about what we just talked about, where how things have changed. And it was like a bygone era. He's at a funeral of a local political boss, and everyone comes out, you know, the Jack Donovan character's there because he will not miss an event, even though it's for a Democratic ward boss. But where, you know, Henry mentions, he says he knows where things have changed, and he has the check for $100,000 in his pocket going over to the local TV station for the ads that are going to run in the final days. And he says, you know, he kind of misses the bygone era where the local politicians were judged by what they delivered for their community. Now, I'm sure it was as corrupt and it had all kinds of other things going on. So I don't want to try to create like the era of the ward bosses and that era was so much better than where it is today. It's just different.
Yeah. No, that's a really accurate assessment, I think. So with the book, what's the rollout like? Where can people find it? I mean, that's kind of it's like an obvious question these days. It's like saying, where can you find a podcast or music? It's like, well, the places that everybody goes, but where can people find you as well if they want to engage with you in person?
Sure. So we had a launch a couple weeks ago, and I've had 400 hard copies before the book was released, and I'm down to a little under 200 now, probably like 150 in my office. And I'm using those for events that I go out to. And I've got an event actually at a senior center, believe it or not, actually an independent assisted living. I'm sorry, let me get that right. A independent senior retirement community. And I'm speaking to their men's group at their luncheon, and I'll have some books available to them. And I had the launch. So I literally go out and speak to groups. I speak to the Warwick Rotary Club later this month. And so that's how you kind of do the retail. It's almost like politics. It's like the retail face of politics. Yeah. Authors today, unless you're, you know, someone famous, literally have to go out to bookstores and do signings and do appearances. And that's how they get their books sold. Yeah. The other side is what's called through the trades. And I'm doing that. And so that's where the publisher comes in. You can buy the book on Amazon. You can buy it on Barnes & Noble. And you can buy it through the publisher himself. And then we're working on getting it into the local bookstores. And that's where the signings and things like that come in. And we were talking about at the beginning about how, before we went on the air, about how, you know, you Google your name, you see all the places you can buy the book. And there's some of them are in foreign languages. And, you know, that was shocking to me when I went and saw that you can buy it in Germany, you can buy it in Australia and things like that. And I never even knew that was possible. So
world is flat, as Thomas Friedman once said, right?
Yes. So, and I built a website since I'm in marketing, and johnhoole.net, my name, you can buy it there. And you know, I will sign anybody's book who buys it through there, who reaches out to me through that website. They want to buy the book, I will sign it for them.
You know, as someone who's at the intersection of, I guess, the public relations industry and modern ways of content distribution in this era where TikTok is huge and people are consuming 7, 10, 15, maybe 30 second videos, in an era where, you know, as a musician, you've got like 20 seconds maybe to grab someone's attention with a song. And if you don't, then you're just going down the memory hole. And at the intersection of that knowledge and that sort of the nature of the beast and being an author, someone who has studied the classics and understands, you know, the ins and outs of writing a book because you've done it now multiple times. Where is literature going? What a broad question, but is it going to grow, or is it going to be hard in this space?
You would think, right, that ebooks are the rage, right? That everybody, that you don't even publish books. I mean, my first print run was 1,000 hardcover books. Okay. I was on an airplane last night and I looked around. And I saw people have books and young people have books because we're in front of screens for so much. There's still something to hold a book and read a book. So books are not going away. Just like music, it's not going away. Yeah. My publisher told me this because, you know, people have asked me, oh, so when I want an audio book. So I asked my publisher, when are we doing the audio book? He said, we can do an audiobook, but let me just tell you how much it costs to do. And I said, well, I'll read it. And he said, well, a lot of where the audiobooks are going is you have famous people read them now. And sure. John, you're not famous. You're a new author. But people don't read, I mean, the audiobooks, they listen to them, but still the number one way people read books are hardcover and paperback books,
yeah.
physical books. So I don't think that's changing. I think it's been around for thousands of years. In fact, I always argue with my graphic designers that the written word is meant to be black on white, black ink on white background. Okay. The Bible was written that way, Shakespeare, we're used to that. So I don't think that's going away anytime soon, but it's hard to grab people's attention. So the marketing of the book has to be, in fact, we've done 15 seconds, 30 seconds, minute videos, and 15 seconds seems to be the magic number.
Yeah.
Probably just, 15.
I was just going to ask that if that's something that, I wonder if that's something that is going to continue to grow. I know for sure with podcasting and radio that, you see clips of podcasts, and I don't do it so much here on Bartholomew Town. I do it a little bit, but partially because our episodes aren't 3 hours long like some podcasts are. You know, we're closer to 20, 30 minutes usually, a Rhode Island car ride, as I call it. But some of the long form 3 hour shows, their short clips are going to vastly outperform the yeah. long form episode. And I wonder if in literature, a similar type of approach is going to happen where you're like, hey, you know, I got someone's attention for 15 seconds. I wouldn't have gotten them at all for a full book. Does that count as a reader?
So interesting. So my chapters are all about 10 pages. Okay. And it was because I still have to do my day job. Right. And so someone was asking me earlier, well, how do you have the time? Well, I said, I really enjoy this. This is my hobby. So I might write 3 pages. I was away for the weekend with my wife, and I wrote five pages over the weekend. So I'm halfway through a chapter. So I conclude the idea when I end for the afternoon or the morning. Every chapter is 10 pages. And I've heard from readers that have already read the book, they like the 10 pages because they can get through 10 pages before they go to bed, or they feel a sense of accomplishment. And as a reader, I felt the same way. I'm like, I don't like these long, long chapters. Same thing with my book. It turns out, and this was not planned, but I just finished the second book and I've started the third. They're each about 300, 3 1/4 pages long. It's going to end up being a trilogy. And it's going to be about 900 and something pages. Maybe it's 1,000 pages, but it's in 3 parts, easy to, and broken out into 10 pages each. So easy to digest. And maybe what's happening is that's how you get through to people, make it easier for them. So I that just kind of came as part of the process of it.
Yeah, that's really, it's terra incognito in a lot of ways right now for longer form arts of any sort. And it's in the visual arts, going to a gallery. Do you make it through a whole show, or how do you digest that? It's in literature, it's in music, it's in film, it's everywhere. And I think you're right, though. My instinct is that people sometimes will say, oh, radio's dying, you know? And I'm like, no, it's not.
You know what's not dying is content is not dying.
Bingo. Yeah.
Okay. That's the key. If you have, I listened to your radio station on the way in this morning. I'll be listening to it later because I want to hear local Rhode Island political content, and I want to hear what the local, so it wouldn't matter if that were in a podcast or if it were on broadcast radio, doesn't matter. It's the content. Content is king.
Yes, absolutely. The Kingmakers of Providence. It is. It's available wherever you get books, and you probably know those places by now. If you don't, I'm sure Amazon and so on and so forth. It's right there, and check out the website. Really interesting stuff. You know, I have to get I have to get a copy. Admittedly, we have a copy that I believe is in Dan York's possession. So I need to maybe I need to break into his house and get it.
I will have a copy over to you. You going into the station?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there every afternoon. I'm there. Yep.
All right. So it'll be waiting for you.
Awesome.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.